inside, deep as the river. Oh.
Chapter 2. She Wears Red Ribbons. The tinkling of metal down bones. It played and it played. Looking up made sense, even as it tore at his sensibility. The skeletal remains grinned at him as the tune took shape, disjointed and discordant. "Who am I?" the tiny bones asked. He wanted to close eyes he did not have. The sound of a baby wailing. It stretched out and out. "Please stop!" And on, "Please, God!" until he thought the sound would drive him from his senses. When Wilgram blinked awake, it was to the sound of his alarm, its acrid beep sounding again and again. He reached out with a vague hand, missing the first time, patting it into silence on the second. As he sat up, pulling the thin duvet with him, he could hear the soft sounds of his xylophone, tinkling. He smiled on instinct, even as he felt no real need to smile, still too close to the dream. Rubbing at his face, his skin felt slack, tired. The bathroom seemed too far away to his sleep-weary legs. Brushing his teeth was slow, and his shoulder twinged with every stroke. He decided to switch hands, but the left was irregular and jerky. He swilled with mouthwash and spat, hating the sour tingle on his tongue. After a quick splash of chill water on his heated face, he thought he felt ready to face the day. Almost. He followed the plink-plonk of clumsy notes until he found himself standing in a half-open bedroom doorway, pushing it all the way open on creaky hinges. "Who's up early?" he asked in a forcedly cheerful tone. A giggle was his reply, and the sight of a scurrying bundle of dark blue pajamas rushing to hide. This time, the smile wasn't forced. He crept inside, crossing his arms. "I could have sworn I heard something in here," he said quizzically, walking into the room, eyes swinging side to side. Another giggle. "Something like a..." He paused, looking to the large wash basket in the corner behind the small, single bed. He grinned, unable to resist shouting, "Little girl!" as he swooped down and grabbed the squirming bundle beneath the armpits, lifting her high. "Ah, good. I was feeling hungry," he said, making her squeal and laugh. "Little girl pie. Sounds delicious. That's it. In the oven with you."
"No, Daddy!"
she laughed as he carried her to the kitchen. "Oh, wait," he said, putting his hand to his forehead as he set her down on the dining room table. "I just remembered. I was going to make pancakes. I suppose I'll just have to eat you tomorrow." Eleanor Graham clapped her chubby hands and grinned, her long brown curls bouncing in a rabid mess around her shoulders. Her pajamas were rather worn, old and patched, but Will didn't mind. He thought she suited them. They went with her wild side. The clatter of claws on the linoleum sounded the procession of the strays. The three shaggy, barely discernible as dogs, rushed in, tongues lolling.
"Good morning, puppies! You're a good dog,"
she said, as she reached down to clumsily pat at Buster's matted fur. "Do you like pancakes? Puppies can't have pancakes."
"Okay, kiddo, better get these started."
"I can help,"
she insisted, struggling with her C's.
"With pancakes? Okay, you can do the flour."
He gave her a mixing bowl to play with while he mixed the batter and fed the dogs. The handful of flour he'd put inside soon found its way on hands, then face, then into hair, onto the dogs and all over everything else. She sat in the middle of the dining table, cross-legged, and tossed flour into the air with a woof sound, leaving her mouth and startled eyes as it drifted back down. Will didn't mind. He'd clean it up later. The pancakes were quick and easy. Also, he direly needed to go grocery shopping. It was just luck he had eggs and milk handy, or breakfast would have been rather difficult, considering they'd had boiled eggs for the past 3 days straight. "You want jam?"
"Yes!"
she said, bouncing up and down in her chair. "I probably shouldn't be giving you sugar," he said to himself as he plastered jam onto the pancakes. "You're hyper this morning."
"Jam! Jam!"
"Okay, okay. Here." The mutts happily bounced out of the back door when he opened it, running down to the beach, paws sinking into the sand as they ran. They'd be back later. They always came back. It turned out the flour may have been more than Will bargained for. The shower turned the flour into her hair into a sticky glue. Will sighed as he rubbed copious amounts of shampoo through the curls, working it free while Eleanor whined about soap in her eyes. "Then keep your eyes closed, sweetheart," he said. "There you go. All gone. See?" She rolled around in her towel on the floor while Will showered, watching her with a shake of his head.
"You're getting dirty," he said, knowing it fell on deaf ears.
"Dirty!" she giggled. "All dirty again! I need a bath!"
"Oh no, come on. We'll be late if we don't get going soon." Her hair fluffed as it dried, creating a wild halo around her head. She sang as Will parted it, gathering it into two even bunches to be tied off with the red ribbons he kept in the drawer.
"Friar Jack! Friar Jack! Drummerville, Drummerville, Sunny Lemontina, Sunny Lemontina, ding, dang, dong."
He was in stitches by the time he'd done her hair. Eleanor stared at him as if he were mad, lying back on the rough carpet, wiping at his eyes.
"Why are you crying?" she asked, confused.
"Oh, I'm okay." He sat up, another few laughs escaping. "I'm all right. It was funny. Your song."
"People only cry when they're hurt."
"Not all the time, honey. It's okay. I liked your song."
"Miss Jenny taught us. She likes singing and break."
"Yeah? Well, let's get you to school and you can learn another one for me. Yeah?" He hated leaving her. Every day when he walked her to the door of Dolphin Bay Preschool, it was difficult to let go of her hand. Of course, she was always pulling to let go, eyes eager and delighted squeals ringing out through the car park. So much like him, and yet nothing like him at all. "Hey," he said, pulling her back one more time as he squatted down to her level. "Don't I get a kiss?"
"Do I kiss it better?"
she asked, bottom lip between her teeth. "That's only if someone is hurt," he said, smiling.
"You were crying."
"Remember, that was because I was happy."
"Not then. You were crying before I went to sleep. Do you want me to kiss it better?"
Will tried to hold on to his smile, but it was difficult. He blinked and swallowed. He thought he could taste the whiskey on his tongue, even though he'd washed it away with copious toothpaste and mouthwash, enough to drown the taste of sorrow left in his mouth. "Yeah," he said, swallowing down the memory. "Of course I do." She leaned in, grabbed his cheeks with both hands, and kissed his nose. Will chuckled, pulling her in for a tight hug. "Ah, you're getting big," he said, forcing himself to pull back. "Go on, or you'll be late and I'll get in trouble. I'll be here when you're done."
"Bye, Daddy!"
The car park was empty when he stood up. Will was glad. Eleanor was too young to know, but any adult worth their salt would be able to see the wounded animal in him. He wiped at his eyes and walked back to the car, hand on the handle. He had almost escaped before a voice called to halt him.
"Mr. Graham!"
He pretended not to hear the opening door.
"Mr. Graham!"
Too late. He pasted on a vague smile and turned to find Miss Jenny running up to him, her dark hair bouncing as she tripped over her sandals. Will automatically reached out to steady her, even as the feel of her hands grabbing his arm was akin to ants crawling across his skin. He pulled back as soon as she was steady, almost using the car door as a shield between them.
"Sorry," she said, smiling. "Clumsy me. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute."
"Okay."
"It's about Eleanor. She..."
"What about her?" Will forced his eyes to meet hers, clear blue, lined by subtle coal.
"Oh, it's nothing bad," she said. "She's just been... Oh, it's silly, really. I just wondered if you knew about her friend."
Miss Jenny used the bunny ears, and Will felt the need to roll his eyes. He'd always hated the gesture. "What friend?" he asked curtly.
"Her imaginary friend," Miss Jenny said. "It's not her fault, but she's been worrying some of the other children, and upset a few when she said they couldn't join in her game. Apparently, it's not a game."
Again, the bunny ears gesture came out. "I see." Will sighed. "No, I didn't know about that. I'll have a talk with her." "Did she say what it was?" he asked. "Dog, tiger, alien?"
"Nothing that mad." She laughed, making Will frown. "Just another little girl. I guess she is maybe a bit lonely. Such a sweet name she's given her, too. Charlotte, I'll let you..."
Will felt it like a sucker punch to the gut. His legs wavered, and he hauled himself into the driver's seat. "Okay, thanks." Will cut her off, closing the door behind him, continuing through the open windows. "I'll talk to her."
"Okay, okay."
she said, laughing awkwardly, picking up on the sudden change in mood.
"I hope I haven't..."
"I said I'll talk to her," Will said, fumbling his glasses from the glove box and jamming them on. Foot down, he didn't give her a chance to reply. The old Volvo made good time down the highway, and Will forced himself to calm down, even as his heart pounded in his chest. "I hope I haven't..." Her words cut at him. Will slowed, tried to change gear, and heard something whine and crunch. He slammed on the hazards and pulled into the hard shoulder, breathing erratic.
In his car, on a sunny Florida morning, Will Graham put his head in his hands and wept. Waking up was a surreal act. The world did not blink into existence. Instead, it seemed to unfold a sense at a time. Sound was muted, as if heard through a layer of thick cotton wool. Taste was acrid and bitter and cloying. Smell was sharp, a disinfectant and hospital mix. Touch was numb and yet warm, almost comforting. Then further presents were unwrapped. The huff hiss of oxygen being pumped, the steady beep of an ECG, realization that trying to move was futile, his sluggish limbs barely responsive. Noticing that there wasn't merely a bitter taste in his mouth, but also nausea rolling in his stomach. Morphine, he managed to surmise as his vision cleared. He recognized the symptoms from after his operation 5 years prior. Gunshot to the leg. They must have given me morphine, he thought groggily. Rolling his head to the right revealed a reasonably sized room, decked in white and mint green. A high rail on the ceiling supporting a half-pulled curtain. There was a nurse there, in blue scrubs, sorting through what seemed to be a drugs trolley. Before her sat two chairs, one empty, the other holding a familiar face. Jack Crawford did not notice Will Graham was awake until he looked up to find him fumbling with his oxygen mask.
"Hey,"
Jack said, voice soft, as if he didn't believe what he was saying. "Hey, he's awake." "I'll get the doctor," the nurse said, closing and locking the drug trolley before rushing out of the room.
"Will, you hear me okay?"
Jack asked, shifting his chair closer to the bed. His throat felt dry, and the mask restricted his mouth. Will decided a slow nod was good enough. Jack seemed pleased with it.
"Good,"
he said, shoulders sagging with 2 days' worth of anxiety.
"Thank Christ, I..."
Will closed his eyes, finding it was difficult to open them again. "Fucking drugs," he thought blearily. Somehow he managed to fumble up to his right shoulder, finding heavy bandages under his fingers.
"It's a clean wound,"
Jack was quick to point out.
"Went right through. They caught the fever before it got a chance to take hold. But damn, you had us worried. You were out for 2 days. Honestly, I thought you weren't going to make it this time, you tough son of a bitch."
Will stared at Jack's fractious smile. Crawford was the first to look away, down to his hands. The more his mind cleared, the sharper the pictures in his memory became. Still shots in a horror gallery.
The knife at his throat.
Will felt his chest contract with every breath. Hannibal on the floor dying, his hand going instinctively to his stomach, then down further to his abdomen. The pain in his system, trying to fight its way through the shock. His fingers curled to claws, and he let out a muffled sound of distress.
"Hey, it's all right."
Jack had taken hold of his right hand clumsily, as if he was holding something confusing and odd. Tears rushed from his eyes as he blinked, running down into his chair. He turned to Jack, eyes pleading.
"Tell me," they asked. "Tell me it's safe."
Crawford frowned. Will managed to bring Jack's hand over to his own abdomen, imploring.
"Yeah, I mean, yes, you're okay."
Jack nodded 3 times.
"You didn't lose the baby. You're gonna be okay."
Only one thing remained in the confused jumble of memories. Will held up his hand, shaking, and placed it on the bed rail. His plain, white-gold wedding ring still shone on his finger. Jack stalled, licking his lips, as if he didn't know whether what he had to say would be good news or bad news. Eventually, Crawford looked him straight in the eye.
"Lecter's alive," he said without inflection. "He's going to be fine."
"Hey."
Will was once more trying to remove his mask. "You want a hand?"
Once free, Will sucked in a tight breath, as if the masks had been restricting rather than life-saving. They were quiet for a moment, just the sounds of the machinery around them, and Will's shuddered breathing as a backdrop. Eventually, Will focused on Jack's tie knot, able to summon the strength for one word.
"Why?" "We've been looking for him for a long time, Will. We found some tire marks in the mud by..."
Jack stopped when he caught Will's gaze, knowing that the specifics could wait. He hauled in a deep breath and let it out through his nose before answering in a matter-of-fact tone.
"Because Hannibal is the Chesapeake Ripper, Will. We've arrested him on 25 counts of first-degree murder, with the opportunity for a hell of a lot more on top of that, if I'm right."
Tears became a flood. Will knew he was squeezing Jack's hand too tightly, but he did not make a sound. The words coming from Crawford's mouth washed over him in a black wave of blood and torn limbs and memories of newspaper articles and old crime scene photographs he'd used as teaching aids. The last thing he remembered clearly was the nurse returning to change the syringe in his morphine drip, before the litany of facts were laid out before him in Jack Crawford's words, outlining the man he loved in his true colors. The tow truck pulled up to his house, and Will hopped out of the passenger seat. The sun was high, approaching noon. He was tired, sore and drained, but somehow couldn't face the idea of sleeping, which was probably for the best, considering he had a car to fix.
"You sure you don't want me to take it to the garage, Will?"
Ralph, the local fix-it guy, leaned out of the driver's side window and asked, adjusting his dirty red baseball cap.
"No, it's fine," Will said, walking to the door. "I can do it."
"I'll do it cheap," Ralph said. "Friend's discount, yeah?"
"Really, I appreciate it, but it's okay. How much do I owe you?"
"Nah, forget about that. I was going this way anyhow. You coming into work later? I could give you a lift if you need to pick up little Ellie."
"I'll manage."
"Okay."
Ralph lifted his eyebrows and shrugged, sighing. "Thanks, Ralph. I'll see you at 5.
"Anytime, man."
The house was cool compared to the midday sun. Will couldn't face the idea of rolling the creeper out and getting underneath the car to see what he'd wrecked. Instead, he started cleaning up the mess Eleanor had made earlier. It became difficult to look at her small handprints in the flour. She'd have been 3 last month, too.
"Shut up,"
he said to no one, rubbing his damp sleeve over his nose and sniffling.
"Just shut the hell up."
As he finished up sorting the house, the knock came. Will wished he could ignore it, but, on looking through the window, he found a familiar face. He knew that ignoring the knock would only make the man go to the back door and try again. It was an exercise in futility on both their parts, but Will was too tired to play the game today.
"Hey, Will," he greeted with a smart smile. "Wow, you okay?"
"Hi, Milo," he said, rubbing absently at the flower on his shirt.
"How many times? It's Jeff. Only my mother calls me Milo," Jeff said.
"You look like a bakery exploded on you."
"We made pancakes this morning."
"Ah, yeah. I know those mornings."
"You want to come in?"
It was the last thing Will wanted, but it was what was expected of him.
"Sure."
The next-door neighbors, Jeffrey and Susan Milo, Will couldn't say he liked or disliked them. Since moving in, he'd opted for ambivalence. It hadn't worked out quite how he'd planned. They were friendly, and that was all he needed. Maybe even more than that he needed, but he didn't want to make a fresh enemy. Jeff was a good friend, and he had precious few friends left. Plus, they had a 5-year-old son that Eleanor was besotted with, little Anthony, so Will knew it was inevitable that they'd have to be friendly. They'd turned out to be a pair of oceanographers. Key Largo wasn't their hunting ground, but apparently they loved the area, working far afield when it came to research. Jeff had taken to making surprise visits when his wife was away, normally when Will was least expecting it. Will wondered if the man thought ambushing him might spontaneously make Will more personable. He didn't have the heart to tell him that he needed socializing like he needed a hole in the head.
"So, Susan away again?"
he asked, as he rinsed out the flour-clogged cloth he'd used to clean.
"Yeah, 3 months this time," Jeff said with a sigh, sitting down at the dining table. "She's gone up the Institute, and they're setting out from there."
"That's St. Petersburg, right?"
Will asked.
"Yeah, she flew out this morning."
"Bet Anthony's taking advantage."
"You bet."
Jeff smiled, scratching at his neck.
"He acts as if I don't know what time his mom sends him to bed, or that he doesn't get to eat junk food when she's around. I give in anyway, but still."
"You're a sap.
And you're one to talk."
"Touché.
Do you want anything to drink? Got anything fizzy? I need the sugar boost."
They sat on the back porch and drank some half-flat lemonade, looking out over the beach to the sparkling pale ocean. The sand lifted in small clouds with the wind. Will brushed his hair out of his eyes, only for it to blow right back.
"Was thinking of having a barbecue at the weekend if you and Eleanor want to come."
"Sounds good."
"I could cook some horse."
"Yeah."
"We could invite Stalin."
"Hmm."
"Will, seriously."
"I heard you. I was just winding you up."
"Still."
"Trying to tell me something?"
"You look rough," Jeff said, putting down his glass on the rough wooden steps. "And you look..."
"I look what?"
Will asked, turning to look at Jeff accusingly.
"Hollowed out."
Will rubbed at his face, glad for the cool residue of the glass left on his fingers. The ocean rippled, white horses marching on the wave tops. The words of the letter danced in his eyes.
"You should never have opened it."
"Guess I feel it, too," he admitted. In a moment of weakness, Will slipped, letting out what festered inside him. "Got another letter yesterday."
"Jesus, that's been a while,"
Jeff said, looking at him worriedly. Will tried not to resent it as Jeff became utterly cautious.
"Are you all right?"
"No."
He smiled without letting it reach his eyes.
"Not really."
"Can't you ask them to stop forwarding them on?"
"Tried. Apparently it's not lawful, or something like that. What a load of bullshit. Christ. Good to know serial killers still have their rights, Jeff said facetiously. Hey, look, I still have to see to the car, Will said, unwilling to think further on the nightmare. I really better get to it, or I'll be walking Eleanor home. I'll give you a lift, Jeff said, lifting up his hand when Will made to automatically decline the offer. Just come give me a shout, okay? Yeah. Will nodded as Jeff stood. Thanks. Sure thing. Will stayed on the porch until the alarm in his house sounded shrilly once more. The white horses marched on with no thought for the eyes that watched them. The rhythmic pulse of a heartbeat relayed through the ultrasound, the sound of life. Will lay still, eyes closed, listening as he felt the monitor move across his swollen belly. The gel was cold, but he didn't mind. The pulses surged again and again, alive. That was all he needed to know. Everything looks great, Will. The nurse, Janine, said with a smile. 5 fingers, 5 toes. All healthy in there. That's what we like to see. Do you want to know the sex? It's a girl, he said without thinking. He opened his eyes and looked at her, noting her small frown. He cleared his throat and hid his wince. Isn't it? Yeah, it is, she said, looking back to her monitor. You see? There she is. The black and pale gray image pulsed in time with the heartbeat. The curled comma shape of a child, fingers trussed up by her barely distinguishable mouth, bobbed on the screen. Will couldn't take his eyes from it. And she's okay? More than okay. There are a couple of things I'm going to bring up to Dr. Hepburn. Nothing major, she clarified before Will could worry. Just a few odd spots in the surrounding uterus. It's probably just a shadow. It's nothing to worry about, I promise. I just want to make sure. Okay. Will gripped the hospital sheets and swallowed, looking back to the ceiling. Okay. He drifted, listening to the sound of the heartbeat throb. Somehow he managed to bear imagining Hannibal standing beside the bed, listening too. Our little girl, he whispered. You were right. What was that? Janine asked. Nothing. Will shook his head. It's nothing. He thought of the last 8 months, most of which had been spent in and out of hospitals. Checks, tests, rechecks, spells of prolonged stay for monitoring. In the beginning, it had been hard, so hard, to be apart from Hannibal. His body had ached for its mate. For the first 3 weeks, the doctor had been worried he wouldn't survive the separation, as Will's organs shuddered on the edge of failing, and he slipped down into a deep depression, staring sightlessly at the ceiling, unable to react. They tried a multitude of replacement therapies, none of which had fooled his body into thinking his alpha was near. In the end, it had been down to nothing more than his will to live. For him and the baby. For him and his little girl. Now look at you, Will thought, as he stared at the screen, his daughter sleeping happily in her safe bubble. You can do this without him, he thought. You can. You both can. A week later, and the inevitable rolled around. I don't want her taking it, Will said sternly. I'm sorry you feel that way, but this is school policy, the head teacher explained, her gray hair swept back in an elegant bun, contrasted with her loose, brightly colored clothes. Then I'm opting her out. It's also state policy, Mr. Graham, she said significantly. When Will didn't reply, she folded her arms on her desk and sat forwards. The room was small but welcoming, the walls covered in group pictures of classes over the years, smiling faces staring in from every direction, flat macaroni figurines stuck haphazardly onto paper. Babyish drawings of houses and dogs and fish were plastered on the filing cabinet. Rachel Foster was a good woman, he knew that, but she was a stickler for bureaucracy. I know you don't agree with the class system. I understand that, but every child over the age of 3 must be tested and registered. It's the law. Can't you just leave it until... Will faltered, swallowing. Until what? He asked himself. I really can't. So we do it in groups. Olivia, Joseph, Jonathan, Allie, there are a few others. She flicked through the paperwork under her hands and, on not finding what she needed, gave up. There are about 17 who fall into the prerequisites this month. Makes it easier on the paperwork not to do them individually and then send the results off. She'll not be drilled for information. It's just a simple set of cognitive, audio, and coordination tests. A quick conversation with a dynamic psychologist. Nothing major, nothing stressful. They try and make it fun, you know? Difficult to keep a 3-year-old's attention. I'm sure you understand that.
Will had stayed quiet as she talked, biting at the thumbnail on his right hand. He took a deep breath and nodded absently, self-consciously sitting up in his chair when he realized he'd slumped into it.
"So are we okay to go ahead?"
she asked when he didn't speak. "Only I need you to sign this consent form."
"Yeah,"
he said after a short pause, sitting forward suddenly to grab a pen, pulling the form over to his side of the desk and signing it messily. "Just... no, never mind. What is it for?"
"We'll do it in class time, Thursday at midday. She'll be done by pickup at 2.
Driving Ellie home was nothing but a litany of questions Will wished he didn't have to answer, and things he didn't want to hear. Damn that fucking test. He cursed silently as they sat at the red light, Ellie's mouth going a mile a minute from the passenger seat. Her eyes were bright and alert, as they always were, when something new had been absorbed, gushing out in a frantic mess of half-learned words and confused principles. The only thing it made him glad for was that he didn't have to start their chat about Ellie's imaginary friend. For a moment, he felt spared a greater misery.
"And we're gonna find out which bit we go in,"
she rabbited, repeating words in her urgency.
"And Olivia is gonna go with me, and we'll speak to a man from the shesh.
"That's the sessions board, honey."
"Sessions board,"
she tried, screwing up her face. Will shook his head and smiled, pulling out as the light turned green.
"And Miss Jenny showed us a big map, and it had all the people on it, and she said she's a beta, and that it's in the middle, and their husband's alfalfa."
"Alpha."
"Alpha," she said carefully. "Alpha. Daddy, what are you?"
"It doesn't matter," he said. "You know what? Whatever they say, it's not important."
"But what are you?"
she asked again, pouting. Will sighed. "Omega, sweetheart. Bottom of the heap." When her eyes lit up and she gasped dramatically, Will could only wonder as to what Miss Jenny had been telling her.
"But you're special, Daddy! Daddy, did you know you're special? Miss Jenny said boy Omegas are special and that they feel things and that they're rare."
"Rare."
"What's rare?"
Will signaled to turn left and rounded the corner slowly as he thought of a way to explain.
"There aren't many of them."
"Oh," she said, "like the whales."
"Whales?" he frowned, smiling.
"Mr. Milo said there aren't many whales left. Is that like you, Daddy?"
"Well, I guess." Will laughed at the analogy, but she was already off again, enthusing.
"She said they're special 'cause they're clever and kind and..."
She paused to take a quick breath.
"They make good mates, and that they...
"Yeah, that's right," Will interrupted, hating to hear the words spewing from her daughter's mouth.
"Indoctrinating bitch," he thought acidly of Miss Jenny, with her foolish smiles and her air-headed bubbliness. "Hey, you want ice cream on the way home?"
"Yeah!" she cried out, grinning. "It was hot today at playtime, and I was thirsty, so I drank lots of juice, but I was still hot, and Manny pulled my hair, so I pushed him in the sand, but then I got in trouble, and I had to sit in the corner."
"It's not nice to hurt people."
"But he pulled my hair!"
"I know, sweetheart, I know."
"I don't want to be a beta."
"How come?"
"They're boring."
"Mr. and Mrs. Milo are betas, so is Anthony," Will explained. "A nice, safe, happy little family of betas." Sometimes the thought made Will jealous beyond beliefs.
"Yeah, but they're just boring," she said, crossing her arms again. "I want to be special, like you. But Miss Jenny said, girl, Omegas aren't special. I want to be alfalfa."
"Alpha," Will corrected automatically, even though hearing it made his stomach cramp.
"Alpha. I want to be alpha, 'cause then I could push Manny in the sandpit and I'd not have to sit in the corner."
"Remember, it doesn't matter what you are," Will said, hands tight on the steering wheel.
"Don't want to be a stupid beta,"
she sulked, slumping down in her seat.
"Let's get you that ice cream, yeah?" Will sighed.
"That's it! That's it, Will! Push! I can't! God, I can't!" he gasped, feeling faint, sweat pouring from his forehead, right hand twisted into the sheets, claw-like, back aching until it felt as if it would snap.
"You can. You can do it. Don't stop now."
The nurse held his hand just as tightly as he held hers while the pain tore through him, mixed with fear and exhaustion in equal measures.
"I can see the head,"
came another voice from the bottom of the bed, hidden by the sheets tented over his raised knees.
"That's it. You hear that?"
The nurse smiled, shaking his hand.
"Just one more push and it'll all be over. Come on,"
she called as Will grit his teeth, screaming through his clenched jaw. Head shoved back into the pillow, eyes tight shut.
"That's it! That's it!
Oh, there she is, came an emotional voice from the midwife. Relief. The air left his body in a rush, huffed back in by fatigued lungs. Sudden and overwhelming relief flooded him as the pressure broke and the pain sank, and the contraction stopped and his body went limp. Will kept his eyes closed and breathed long and low, swallowing what little saliva he could gather down his ragged throat, hoarse from hours of screaming and yelling obscenities. It was as the quiet continued that he opened his eyes and looked up. He could see the nurse's back, looking down, her face hidden. Then the midwife stood, carrying a barely discernible bundle in her arms to the pre-prepared table, laying it on the blanket.
Ultrasound was fine 3 weeks ago, he thought he heard as the woman murmured closely together. What's wrong? He asked, feeling the first tingling of panic.
Will, please, just be calm, the nurse said, turning back to hold his hand, blocking his view of the midwife and the baby.
What's wrong? Why is she quiet?
She's not crying. He felt his chest seize.
Will.
The nurse turned to look over her shoulder. The midwife looked up, solemn. She shook her head, and Will felt the bottom drop out of his world.
No,
he said, shaking his head as his face crumbled.
Oh, no, no, no. No, that's not possible. Please, she was fine. Please, that's not.
Will, look at me, okay? Just look at me. The nurse hunkered down beside the bed, her eyes glassy. She hasn't been breathing for a long time.
No,
he sobbed, hand coming up to his mouth as his eyes squeezed shut.
This isn't possible. Oh, God, please.
His voice stuttered into a long-held, keening sound, like an animal in pain. Then suddenly the pain in his chest seemed real, and it moved lower and lower, and the pain built and built until he was gritting his teeth and huffing out his breath.
Oh, God, what?
Maria, the nurse was saying urgently. Maria, I think there's another.
But that's twins.
The midwife hurried back, pulling her chair back in with an abrasive scraping.
The heartbeat, the nurse was saying to her, sounding shocked. It was twin.
Okay. She turned back to Will, who was staring at her, lost.
Okay, listen. You have another baby coming. I know you're exhausted, and I know it's the last thing you want to think about right now, but I need you to push.
I can't, Will croaked out, tears burning his eyes.
Please, I can't.
You can. You have. It won't be as hard this time, I promise. You can do this for her, Will.
But what if she's...
He paused to clench his teeth and groaned as the pain lanced up his spine and burned between his legs.
Oh, God, I can't.
She's going to be fine, Will, if we can get her out. Come on, you're so brave. You can do this for her.
Can't.
His breathing stuttered out of sync with his heart, and Will convulsed as his head swam and the pain consumed him, turning harsh and gritty, more than it had been before, far more.
Cynthia, get the doctor,
the midwife said suddenly, voice pale.
What?
The nurse asked, before turning to look and sucking in a breath. Will's head lolled to the left, catching sight of the midwife standing, her scrubs drenched in fresh red blood. The world seemed to roll like a wave, up with a high and down with a drop in his stomach. The air became thick and heavy, and he couldn't focus. His eyes rolled in his head. Will slipped into the waiting blackness without the ability to stop it. Time was as nothing. As quick as his eyes had closed, so did they open. When he woke, it was to the sound of wheels on the hard floor, rushing back and forth in a steady motion, and the sound of gurgling. The lights were dimmed when he finally managed to open his eyes, revealing a young male nurse, white blonde hair, and a wide smile, rolling a trolley back and forth before him. Everything hurt. Nothing specific. Just a blanket of discomfort and pain laid over his prone form. He supposed his eyelids didn't hurt, or his elbows, but they seemed to be exceptions. He looked around for a drip, and, finding it, found the clicker on the bed by his hand. It was difficult to grasp, but he managed, clicking the button decisively and waiting for the rush. When the morphine kicked in, it was akin to bliss, even though he knew the nausea would follow soon after.
Hey, you're awake, the nurse said, pulling Will's eyes to him. I know you're pretty groggy right now, but they said it would be all right if you want to hold her.
The bed tipped with a mechanical whine, sitting Will up. He winced slightly at the feeling in his abdomen, his hand going to the skin at the base of his bump and finding a heavy wound dressing as a barrier to his skin. When he took the baby, swaddled in cloth and kicking her legs, Will looked at her with wonderment, only able to ask,
"How did you get here, huh? How did you get here?"
"If you want, I could." The nurse stopped, clearing his throat. "You see, she didn't turn. It's what we call a LOT. She was lying sideways."
"Breech?"
Will asked clinically as the situation began to sink in, peeling back cloth from the baby's face to get a better look at her.
Right, yeah, that's it. The nurse looked sorry, and Will knew what was coming before he said it. You had a rupture in the uterine wall. It's rare in first births, but not impossible. We had to do an emergency C-section, but we couldn't control the bleeding. Hysterectomy? Will asked, monotone as he stared at the baby's eyes, bright and long-lashed and distinctly maroon in color. Hannibal's eyes. Yes. The nurse nodded, seeming genuinely regretful. I'm really sorry. I really am. The surgeons tried everything they could. I know, Will said softly, swallowing down the hurt and the pain and the shock and the need to hide and never come out again. A small, flailing hand against his cheek distracted him from the dark place, bringing him back. Where is she? I'm sorry. Who do you... My other daughter. Where is she? She's been... The man cleared his throat and stood up from lounging against the wall. Taken to the morgue. I see, Will said with a pained smile, nodding his head. He paused, waiting for consent. Eventually Will nodded. I'm afraid the umbilical cord had become wrapped around her neck. How long? We're not sure. It may have been up to a month. He quickly changed the subject. We didn't know. I mean, we weren't expecting it. I read your file. She said there were always odd spots on the ultrasounds. Will nodded. It was a second amniotic sac. It's rare. But sometimes in male omega pregnancies, the baby can slip. Your uterus isn't the same as a woman's, and it can fold to accommodate another fetus. Yeah. Will guessed the man could tell he was no longer listening, if he ever had been. One behind the other, the living hiding the dead. Will absently stroked over the baby's arm, causing her to blow bubbles from her mouth and make a sucking sound. So, the nurse cleared his throat, looking around awkwardly. What's her name? Did you have a name? The little bundle in his arms let out a burble and fumbled at his chin. Will ducked down to kiss at the tiny fingers, eyes closed tight in momentary sorrow, all that he could allow himself without falling apart. Eleanor, he said. Her name is Eleanor. A hand appeared on his shoulder. Will looked up sharply, resenting the touch. Human contact had become a tricky subject since Hannibal had been incarcerated. His craving for it was difficult to ignore, but receiving it was unpleasant. The smell that accompanied it was wrong, and the pressure was never the same. It was as if his body knew his alpha's touch and berated him for trying to accept an imposter's. If you want me to, the nurse said, gripping tighter. Will bore it. I can... For your other girl. If you want, I can put her name down. I'll make sure it gets to her, if you want me to. It'll go on her certificate. After a pause, long enough for the nurse to remove his hand, Will nodded. He kept his eyes on Eleanor as he spoke. Charlotte, he said, so quietly he was amazed the nurse could hear. He cleared his throat and leaned his head back against the rough, white pillowcase, eyes closed. He wanted to call her Charlotte.
Don't chase the pigeons, he called, shaking his head, arms full with two bulging grocery bags. The car park was packed, forcing Will to wind his way through the maze-like jumble of cars to his own pale blue Volvo, sitting like a sardine in a can near the back row. The shop had been a stressful mix of trying to find what he needed and the understock shelves, avoiding the hundreds of other patrons as they plowed ahead with no thought for him, and, worst of all, trying to stop Eleanor opening everything he put in his shopping cart from her little bucket seat by the handles. And now, as per the course, his 3-year-old wasn't making the return journey any easier. Ellie, he said as she laughed, chasing after the wild-eyed gray birds, fluttering away from her and running on their stubby pink legs. Ellie, come here! Then he saw it. The car turned in, gleaming red and sleek, rumbling under the weight of an overpowered engine as it sped through the car park. Ellie waved her hands and jumped after the closest bird with a, "Gotcha!" right out into the road. Time slowed down. Ellie! The bags dropped. Will ran what must have only been 10 feet, but it seemed like 10 hundred. Reaching out and grabbing the back of her black cotton jacket and her pleated red skirt, Will pulled her back as the car screeched to a halt. Everything became very still until his mind caught up, realized that they were both there, safe, sitting on the gravel-littered ground. His heart was hammering, and suddenly she was crying in his arms, a long, slow wail of fright. "Hey, man, you okay? Jesus, I didn't see her. Is she all right?" Will looked up to see a young man, face pale with worry, eyes wide, standing by the red car, engine still running. "Sorry," Will breathed as he struggled up, Ellie heavy and awkward in his arms, his breathing heavy and his hold on her tight and constricting. "We're fine. It's fine."
Hey, I'm sorry, the man was saying, rubbing the back of his neck. When Will turned round, people were staring, halfway out of their cars or walking towards the entrance, eyes intrigued and mouths moving. Will rushed her to the car, throwing open the door and strapping her in. She sat, nose running and face crumpled in a sob. He locked her in and went to retrieve his bags, hands shaking. Only a few things had rolled loose. A nearby woman helped him round them up, even if she didn't look particularly happy with him. When he got back to the car, he leaned against it, forehead resting on the glass. He could hear her mumping and crying intermittently. He took a deep breath, but it did nothing to calm him.
"How many times do I have to tell you to listen to me?" he said angrily as he drove them home. "Ellie, I swear to God, stop crying."
"Didn't mean it,"
she said, breaking into a hiccuping cry.
"That doesn't matter." He jammed the gear stick into place and turned into his driveway. "You could have been dead, dead, dead," his mind supplied unhelpfully. "Hurt. You could have been hurt. You said you didn't want me to be sad, right?"
She nodded, sniffing noisily and wiping at her face clumsily.
"Then you have to listen to me and not run off."
Will tried to calm down as he jerked the handbrake up. "Because I'd be sad if anything happened to you."
"Didn't mean it, Daddy,"
she said, leaving snail trails on her jacket sleeves as she wiped her nose.
"I know, honey," he said, rubbing at his mouth. "I know, okay. Just promise me you'll be careful from now on."
"Promise,"
she said quietly, lost to her jacket as she remained buried in it. It wasn't until he stepped out of the car that he realized there was a car parked on their street, a gray, nondescript saloon sitting precisely by the pavement. Will looked at it with a frown as he retrieved Ellie from the passenger seat, lifting her down. As he watched, getting his bags from the trunk, a door opened and a young woman stepped out. She looked mid-20s to early 30s at the most, dark hair fashionably shoulder length, curling under with millimeter precision. Will was suspicious of the regimental look to her clothing, the gray of her knee-length skirt and her jacket matching her car, white shirt beneath, black court shoes tapping on the concrete. He ignored her, even as it was obvious she was approaching him. Ellie hid behind his legs as he turned the key in the lock. "You go inside, okay?" he said, sending her scurrying in. He heard the shoes stop behind him.
"Will Graham?"
The voice was soft, a southern curl to her R's, her vowels coming from the back of her mouth, making her accent seem deep and rich. Will put down his bags just inside the door and turned. She was pretty up close, clear blue eyes and a slightly upturned nose, but there was also severity to her features that spoke of a lack of experience. A little girl wearing grown-up clothes. She reached into her pocket when he didn't answer straight away. "Don't bother," he said, stalling her movements. "I don't need to see the badge. Crawford sent you, right?" She blinked twice, though her expression did not change. Will gave her the benefit of a doubt, and guessed if he was to look at her badge, it would sport a recent date. Only just an agent and no more. Jack was either getting lazy or desperate. "Great," he sighed, letting out a derisive chuckle. "Look, I don't really have the time for—" "My name is Clarice Starling," she interrupted, pulling out her badge regardless of his protests. Will felt vindicated as he noted the date, 3 months prior. "I'm here as a courtesy. May I come inside?" "What's this about?" Will asked, tired. "It's actually about a case I'm currently working on." She paused. "I'd really rather talk somewhere private if we can." "I said I'm busy." "It's about Dr. Lecter," she said without preamble. "No shit it is," he said, and she looked a little taken aback. "Why the hell else would anyone want to talk to me?" "Then, may I?"
"She's precocious, isn't she?"
Will flinched, the familiar voice speaking as if just over his left shoulder, held a curious tone. He ran a hand through his hair, blinking, before he heard Ellie calling from the inside.
"Dad! Buster wants outside!"
"All right," he called in. When he turned back to Agent Starling, she hadn't moved. "Seems like you're still here," he said wryly, sighing. "Jack knows how to pick them. Well, I guess you'd better come in then." "Thank you," she said, unflinching in the face of his cynicism. The door shut decisively behind them. The clouds moved quickly over the water, and then wind picked up. Birds scattered from the marram grass on the dunes, wings flapping and catching the late afternoon sun. 1,152 miles from Will Graham's little ship on the sea, a pair of lips smiled in their cage.